You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again Rick Mayberry. He hasn't been with us for a number of months, and it's really good to have him back. He publishes a newsletter called Richard Mayberry's Early Warning Report, and the best place to go to sign up for his letter, and it's a very reasonably priced letter. I've been subscribing to it for decades now. It's the earlywarningreport.com. Earlywarningreport.com is where you can go to sign up for Rick's excellent newsletter, and he is known as the 2,500-year-old man. No, he's not quite that old. He is a senior citizen, I dare say, as am I. But the fact is that he packs in the wisdom of a 2,500-year-old man, and he learns from history, which is something Americans seem not to care very much about these days. We don't seem to care much, and those of us who have lived a number of decades, though, do have some history in our rearview mirrors that we can relate to what's going on these days. But I'm really happy to have Rick with me. Thanks for joining me again, Rick.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Jay. I always enjoy talking with you. It's great to talk with somebody who's trying to give the public some alternative to the mainstream media, which is so heavily socialist. So, thank you very much for me personally for doing a good job of giving people another side of the story besides the mainstream press.
Well, thank you, Rick. And, you know, it is a side of the story that was much more familiar when we were young people. The idea that free markets and people being free and having liberty and a limited government, and the idea that we were created to be free and make choices. And I think the more that we are protected by government, the more we rely on government, the less we rely on our own gifts and talents and brains to think things through and do things for ourselves. But anyway, in my opening remarks today, I talked about America moving towards socialism, and I noted that some of the most notable brutal dictators in the past were socialists, people like Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong, Pol Pot were all socialist. I know some people maybe look at Hitler and say, well, no, there's a complete difference. Hitler was a fascist. A socialist are good, fascists are bad. But there really isn't all that much difference, in my view, from what I see if you examine the policies of Hitler as opposed to a Stalin. Maybe one was more on the racist side. But other than that, anyway, I'd like to hear your thoughts. To what extent, and a lot of people now, especially on the Democrat, extreme Democrat left, and you see this on the internet, people really, they equate our current president to Hitler, and then that seemingly gives them, you know, the ends justifies the means. My goodness, if we've got a Hitler in the White House, we've got to get him out of there. But anyway, what are your thoughts on the difference between fascism and communism, and where do we stand now as a nation on that spectrum? Or, you know, I used to see that we were right in the middle somewhere between the two extremes, but what are your thoughts?
I don't think we're in the middle anymore at all. No. I think practically any mainstream philosophy that you want to bring up now is fascist, and some of those morph into socialism. But let's talk about fascism first. It's the easiest philosophy to understand. It's the original philosophy of the Roman Empire, and a fascist believes that right and wrong, well, back up, that all truth is a matter of opinion. That's the fundamental premise of fascism. All truth is a matter of opinion, which means right and wrong are just matters of opinion, and therefore power holders should do whatever appears necessary. No exceptions, no limits. Now that's fascism. The whole, all of the fascist philosophy boils down to that, that right and wrong are just matters of opinion, so people with power should do whatever appears necessary. Now, what a socialist is a person who believes according to Marx and Lenin and the other socialist originators, a person who believes that the world is evolving from one step to another, and that it is the job of social reformers to move us in the direction of that naturally occurring sequence of events in economics. And it goes, let's say, we can start with feudalism, or it's sometimes called the manor system, and then you go to mercantilism, and then capitalism, and then socialism, and then communism. We'll look at the word communism real quickly. Communism is regarded as the end stage of socialism, and communism is a utopian system in which everybody works for the good of everybody else, and we all live happily ever after. So there's been almost no case in history where communism actually was tried and worked. You might find a few religious monasteries where it's worked, and maybe a few hippie communes back in the 60s, but basically nobody's ever been able to make communism work. So what happens is that somebody who is, or let's say a government that is pushing the country in the direction of socialism, winds up getting stuck there because this utopian end system doesn't really exist and cannot exist. Humans just don't behave that way. So you're stuck with socialism. And what is socialism? Socialism is a system in which the government owns and controls everything and everybody. Now, you see a lot of fascists that go in that direction because they love the idea of the government owning and controlling everything and everybody, because they want to run the world. So there's a very close, almost a marriage, between socialists and fascists. The fascist tends towards socialist behaviors because it gives him what he wants, which is more power. And the socialist has unlimited power. And you see this in what the children are taught in school. In the United States, in fact, throughout the world, the schools are owned or controlled by government agencies, all of them. And being owned and controlled by government agencies, they teach the kids that the answer to every problem is more government. And what that leads you to is socialism, where the government owns and controls everything and everybody. And that is essentially the direction that America is moving today, because that's what everybody's taught in school. The government is the answer to your problems. The government is your superhero. And when you're in trouble, the government will come to your rescue. And we'll do good things for you.
and it will cost you nothing. And it will cost you nothing.
Right. Yeah, we're going to make some other guy pay for it. You won't have to pay for it. Somebody else will pay for it. And, you know, it's all a big hoax. It's both socialism and fascism. They attract power junkies. Americans aren't used to thinking in terms of political power being a bad thing, because they're taught in school that it's a good thing. And so they aren't really aware of what political power is. And political power is the legalized privilege of using brute force on people who have not harmed anyone. That's the essential nature of political power, and has been all through history. When you find somebody who has political power, he is somebody who has the privilege of using brute force on people who haven't harmed anyone. And we all experience that at tax time every year. You're told you're going to buy what the government is selling or else. Whether it's
no choice
to you or not is irrelevant. You better buy it, or people with guns will come to your home and haul you away to prison. So that's what essentially political power is. It's this right of using force on people who haven't harmed anyone. Mm-hmm. I'll stop there.
that's very good. And I think, though, you know, you said that we're not taught the dangers of powerful governments in our schools for obvious reasons. As they are statist schools, and why would the people that run the country want to give up, you know, these people that are power junkies, why would they want to give up their power? So they're not going to teach people the other alternative that America was built on, where they were really, the founders understood very well how dangerous it is for to have a brute government, a dictatorship running over you, and as the King of England was to the colonies, at least at that time. Yes. Richard, so we have, though, we have all these really concerned people. You know, we have an organization called Antifa, which stands for anti-fascist. Now, these mm-hmm. people must certainly be doing some good work to get rid of the fascist, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of nervous talking about these kinds of groups because I don't actually know the people personally. Okay. I think that, and, you know, this is just a guess. I don't know them personally. Just mm-hmm. a guess that they are what Lenin is alleged to have called, let's see, what was it? Useful idiots. Mm-hmm. Useful idiots. Mm-hmm. And what Lenin meant was that there are huge numbers of people who will go out and strive for some cause, even fight for it, even die for it, without understanding the real thinking of the people who are the leaders of the cause. Mm-hmm. Again, the term is useful idiots.
Yeah.
And I really tend to think, I used to be a public school teacher, so did my wife. We know what goes on in public schools. And I tend to think that the public school systems all over the world, these schools owned and controlled by government agencies, have been morphed into systems for producing useful idiots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not supposed to think for ourselves, right? We're supposed to just shut up and obey. So
yes,
and we're taught that in the schools. We're not taught any longer. Our son Scott went off to a school that was the Great Books Program, St. John's College in Annapolis, and there they encouraged kids to be critical thinkers of the great works of the past. And they would sit in their classes, and everybody was required to give their thoughts of what was Plato really saying, what was Marx really saying, what was, you know, all the great thinkers of the past, the philosophers and so forth. And it was geared towards getting people to think. That wasn't my university experience so much as it was just regurgitation. You know, learn the facts and replay them for the exam, and you get your A, and you're just doing just fine. Is that we're being programmed, it seems, as a country, not to think, to just obey. And then I wonder, with all of the COVID that's come out, with the COVID problem that we have, it seems like an awful lot of people, at least up until now, there seems to be some pushback now, but have been willing to just shut up and obey. You've seen that, right, for the most part?
Right. An article that I have coming up in Early Warning Report here in the next few weeks is about that. Whether or not something is a pandemic is a result of the statistics. It all boils down to the statistics. How many people have to die before you call it a pandemic? You know, is it 1,000 or 1,000,000 or 10,000,000 or how many? And there are no medical statisticians who have any kind of agreement on what a pandemic is. Mm-hmm. All that happened was that, along about March, I think it was, the World Health Organization, which is part of the UN, which is one of the most corrupt organizations in the world, the World Health Organization came out and said, there's a pandemic. And that was at a time when the number of Americans who had died of COVID-19 was reported at 34.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 34 dead Americans constituted a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's insane. But the mainstream media and the government
jumped on it as if it was the God's honest truth. Mm-hmm. And they've been on it ever since. They won't admit that they keep pumping this pandemic thing without knowing what a pandemic is. Nobody knows what it is. There's no agreement on what that word means. So the whole country has been kept in this state of fear without any reliable evidence that there really is a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Because there can't be, because there's no definition of what that word means. Mm-hmm. There's an attempt to be a definition in the WHO's website. Yeah. There's an article there that's 680 words long that attempts to define pandemic. And all that article boils down to is nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's an arbitrary definition. But certainly, I would guess that it is a serious problem. But as you pointed out before, and even the authorities have said that, you know, we're not absolutely sure about who you know, people die of or with COVID, yes. You know, so it's sort of, even the accounting of the COVID deaths is highly suspect, I think, and even the authorities would admit to that. But Rick, I'd like to get on to, you know, some issues regarding how people should really try to protect themselves. We have this socialist or this fascist movement where we're giving less and less ability to control our own futures. We're being told what to do. We're having money taken away, I think, very much through the inflationary process. Every time trillions more dollars are put into the system, the people that have savings in the stock market are getting richer and gold and silver and that sort of thing. But the vast majority of people are not in that position. But what is your best advice? And I know that you do a lot of good work with regard to long-term investing. You've been very successful with your subscribers in that regard. But just maybe, you know, coping with this new world order. And I think, you know, we're talking about the real goal of the elites is to have a one world government. So each country has less and less autonomy, and they want to sort of submit to a one world government. Do you see that coming? Do you see that as a threat? And if so, just sort of help us think about how average people can do what they can do to try to protect themselves as best they can.
Well, one of the main things is precious metals, as you have explained to people many, many times. The precious metals are something that cannot be created on a printing press like political currencies can. They are real money. I'm talking mostly about gold and silver, but also platinum and palladium are moving in that direction of becoming money now, too. Mm-hmm. I think it was a month or two ago, I recommended to people that they start buying palladium. I'm sorry, back up. Platinum. I was recommending platinum and saying it was the bargain right now. It was the best deal I could find in regards to precious metals. And sure enough, boy, it's been really moving lately. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, and I think platinum will remain the best deal for a little while here yet. I don't know, maybe a few months. It's hard to say. But that's the main thing is get some precious metals. Gold, silver, platinum, palladium. And at this time, my first choice would be platinum. But, you know, gold especially, that's still regarded around the world as money. And the most trustworthy money because it can't be created on a printing press or electronically like is done mostly now. And so that, you know, that's the main thing is get some precious metals. I'm not saying turn your whole portfolio into precious metals, but 10 to 20% in precious metal coins, especially in the United States, Canadian maple leafs or U.S. Eagle coins. Either one, I think, are very, very good investments.
Mm-hmm. And you've also, you have done very well in the stock market, too, especially with defense stocks.
Yes. And I think they are just getting started on another tear here because the Europeans, one of the really good things that, Trump did is he convinced the Europeans that if they are attacked, the Americans may not show up. And so that tells the Europeans they have to start spending money to defend themselves. And the only way to do that is to go out and buy the stuff it takes to have a military defense, which they don't have right now. It's amazing how much the Europeans are just totally helpless. They bought into this idea that U.S. politicians told them for decades and decades, look, you don't have to protect yourself. You can go ahead and spend your defense money on socialist welfare programs, and if you are attacked, we'll send American men and women over there to die protecting you.
All right, Rick, we're gonna have to wrap it up now. I see that my engineer is telling me we're out of time, and it sounds like they're trying to convince the world, American politicians, of the same thing that they've tried to convince Americans of. There's so much more to talk to you about, so we'll have to have you back sometime soon, but I am out of time, unfortunately. Okay. And again, folks, sign up for Rick's newsletter. It's really a bargain. So you need to go to earlywarningreport.com, earlywarningreport.com to do that. All right. Thanks, Rick, and we'll be back. We'll talk to you again sometime soon, I hope. Folks, that is it for this week. Next week, Alistair McLeod and Michael Hudson of Hannon Metals will be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.